This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. St. Louis is full of rich history and many broken glass ceilings. Known as the Gateway to the West, it's been the site of many trailblazing civil rights battles that are sometimes taken for granted generations later. Part of that illustrious history involves the life and legacy of tennis player and civil rights activist Richard Hudlin. His name may ring bells for those well-versed in sports history, but his career educating Black St. Louisans and coaching world-renowned Black athletes had a lasting impact in our city and beyond. This conversation is about Richard Hudlin, but first, a quick note. We've updated this podcast with a correction. We got something wrong when it initially aired. We said Richard Hudlin's 1945 lawsuit to desegregate St. Louis's tennis facilities was successful, but it wasn't. A judge ruled the Municipal Athletic Association was a private club that could choose its own members. Despite that loss in court, Hudlin continued his fight for equal access. Those efforts were instrumental in shaping the future of tennis in St. Louis and the eventual desegregation of the city's recreational facilities in 1950. Some references throughout the conversation remain incorrect. For our conversation, I talked with Cicely Hunter, public historian of the African American History Initiative at the Missouri Historical Society, and Amanda Clark. Amanda is also a Missouri Historical Society public historian and its CSTL tours manager. There seems to be a lot of information about Richard Hudlin, but also, and frustratingly we'll say, not much information simultaneously. Now, much of what is out there, it pertains to his impact on tennis in St. Louis and the United States overall. But I want to start with Hudlin's earlier life. So Cicely, before Richard Hudlin became a renowned tennis player, coach, and civil rights activist, what do we know about him? He came from a pretty influential family, didn't he?
Yes, he certainly did. And there's even some discrepancies related to when he was born and the specific dates. So there might be some dates referred to as 1905 or 1900 or I think 1898 was another one.
Oh, wow.
But there's records from specifically his registration of World War I, his draft card details that he was born September 24th, 1899 in St. Louis, and he was born to Richard Hudlin Sr. and Barbara Hudlin. Those two were were his parents. And so it's just interesting to know that even as we detail such a prominent figure connected to St. Louis's history and his family, even the mere date in which he was born, there's discrepancies that exist to this day. So you do have to do that genealogical digging in order to find the documents to support actually when he was born.
Mm-hmm. Talk with us a little bit more about his parents.
Yeah, so his parents in particular, his father was a journalist and a reporter. And there's, of course, records and things like that to support that he was doing that work within St. Louis. And his father eventually would go on to pass away at the age of 59 years old in 1918. But very much a part of this pretty incredible family here in St. Louis. There's records that also account for Richard Hudlin. After his father passed away, he was then living with his mother. And then I think even later, he was living with one of his sisters. Mm-hmm. So that's just a little bit of background about the family, just to kind of set the stage for Richard Hudlin and many of the things that he would do in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. Why is it so hard to find, concrete information, that aligns one piece with another?
That's an excellent question. Some of that is due to record keeping. There's even in some of the census records, he's defined as a mulatto with an M, right? And sometimes there's representations of a B for being Black. And so there's discrepancies sometimes even within the records. So you do have to sometimes take some of those records with a grain of salt and support based off of other records to kind of provide the adequate information to sustain actually what transpired and when. But there is some misinformation out there. And so, you know, you do have to kind of do your due diligence to continue to research and then as many sources as you can find. A lot of times that's how you get to the final nitty gritty of the story that supports it. But in many cases, the archival records, when we talk about Black history, we do have to think about the archival records and what is lacking or the gaps. And so sometimes it's even filling those gaps with other information from newspaper accounts, from other supporting documentation to provide the filling in, so to speak, of that history and of that legacy. Mm-hmm. So it's a part of the history of Black Americans. And it's something that we continuously are making sure that not only with the oral history, but also with the ways in which we share our stories through the records.
Mm-hmm. We want to invite you to this conversation. Are you familiar with the life and story of Richard Hudlin? Have his contributions to desegregating public sports facilities affected how you've been able to enjoy athletics, either as a player or as a fan? Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. You can also send an email to talk@stlpr.org. Now, Amanda, you included Hudlin's contributions to shaping Forest Park, specifically in Yours Forever, Forest Park at 150. That is an exhibit that you curated at the Missouri History Museum. Is any of what Cicely has described some things that you encountered as you were doing research?
Well, unfortunately, with this, you know, this exhibit is in a smaller space at the museum, so I didn't have enough space to go deep into some of these topics. It was Richard Hudlin's story, though, was one of those, you know, when I was assigned this exhibit, he was a non-negotiable. Like, he was, I knew from the first minute he was going to be in this exhibit. Just like when I, you know, started to plan the exhibit and I wanted to, you know, plan the whole thing around that opening quote, you know, 1876, saying that this is for everyone. Mm-hmm. His story was what was always in my head to illustrate that, was it for everyone and how did that change over time?
Yeah. So let's get to some of the things that we do know about Richard Hudlin. One of those is that he attended the University of Chicago, and he was the captain of its tennis team in 1928. And that was during a time when the U.S. was very much segregated. So, Cicely, what is known about his time at University of Chicago, you know, between his athletic exploits and his education?
Yeah, so I did see a picture of him, and this would have been, I think it was like cap, it was labeled cap and gown, and it was him and a couple other people. And it talked about, at the time, I think that record is from 1926. So it said that he was a freshman, he was on the varsity tennis team. And at that time, so he would not have been a part of what we know now as the first Black captain of a Big Ten team. So it didn't account for that. But it also even listed that he was a member of Kappa Alpha Psi, which is a Black fraternity, and founded on the principles of brotherhood and other things that folks who are from Kappa Alpha Psi would be able to recognize and understand. So it's different source material like that, a photo, you know, cap and gown, labeling, and some other photographs of other people that provide context about his life at that particular time. So that was one of the sources that I found, which was interesting because we don't typically know of that. You have to do that digging in order to find a record like that.
Mm-hmm. And then after he graduated from University of Chicago, he did come back to St. Louis, and he ended up at Sumner High School. He taught and coached tennis there. And Sumner High School itself, we've talked about a lot on this show. It holds so much history on its grounds and in its walls. Talk with us about Hudlin's career as an educator at Sumner High.
Yeah, so one of those such students was Arthur Ashe, who we know and love today. He's someone who rose to prominence as this incredible tennis player, and then has this very rich story of having to come to St. Louis because of the different discriminatory practices that were happening in Richmond, Virginia. And so Hudlin takes Arthur Ashe in particular into his home and trains him. And it was his senior year. Like, I literally cannot imagine like going to another school during my senior year.
Right.
Yeah, to play the sport that I know and love. And in Hudlin, there's some quotes even in some of the articles that I read, which talked about like St. Louis was pivotal for Arthur Ashe and was incredible in the making of this athlete that we know and love today. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think, you know, Richard Hudlin, he coached, I believe, for like 36 years. He taught at Sumner for, I think, roughly a very long time as well, and served students to the best of his abilities, and also had a dynamic, he was a dynamic force with civil rights here in St. Louis. So there's so many different layers to Richard Hudlin that we don't always see the pieces of him and the intricate ways in which he helped to shape the rich environment of St. Louis today.
Yeah. So it was then during Hudlin's tenure at Sumner that he sued for the public tennis facilities in St. Louis to be open to all athletes. And we're talking about 1945. So it's not that long ago, but it's some time back. Tell us about that lawsuit, Amanda. You know, who were the key players, and what was it, you know, that Hudlin was up against?
So the mid-1940s is a time that is just in St. Louis, so rich with people pushing back on segregation and working, you know, taking things to the courts and calling calls to action. And we see for Hudlin, you know, so at that time, St. Louis had two different leagues, lots of leagues for sports. But the two major ones were the Municipal League, and then you had a league for black players. And that would be for tennis, that would be for golf, you know, different swimming, all kinds of different sports. Everything was just down the middle, divided by race. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't, yeah, and so the city was providing, you know, we always say it with quotes, separate but equal facilities. So for black tennis players in St. Louis, they were playing at Tandy Park next to Sumner. Mm-hmm. For white tennis players in St. Louis, they could play in the new courts in Forest Park. So that's the issue at hand, is not necessarily the park, but it's the fact that there are not, you know, that they needed to, there were different facilities for athletes. And so he brings up not just the courts, but his own ability to be in the Municipal League, the main league. And so, because when you had those two leagues, there wasn't one city champion, right? And so the point is, there should be one city champion.
This reminds me of conversations we've had about baseball here, and also things that I have heard about how basketball leagues have operated in the St. Louis region. Certainly not exclusive to here, but because we are located here. That's what I've heard tell of. When it comes to the lawsuit, so after winning the lawsuit against the Muni Tennis Association of St. Louis, Richard Hudlin became the president of that very same association. You know, might that tell us something about, you know, how local community members felt about equal access changes that Hudlin worked to make? Specific to the sport of tennis or just overall? I'll leave this open to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's one of my favorite, whenever I'm telling the story of Richard Hudlin, I love to end it with the, and by the time he died, he had been, you know, not only are there courts in Forest Park named after him, but he was the president of that association. So yeah, it's a great story, mm-hmm. connection.
And before I forget too, you'd mentioned that Tandy Park was where courts for black players were. Mm-hmm. And then there were new courts in Forest Park. There's a big difference between playing on an old court and a new one. So equal access not only to just walking onto a court, but being able to practice and perfect the skills that you have.
Right, and there were courts all throughout the city, and the court case was to integrate all of them, right? It wasn't just Forest Park versus Tandy. It was to integrate all of them. And then this, you know, spills out into the into other sports, swimming, you know, other municipal athletic facilities.
Mm-hmm. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue our conversation about the life and legacy of civil rights activist Richard Hudlin. This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Cecily Hunter and Amanda Clark, public historians at the Missouri Historical Society. Before the break, we were talking about Richard Hudlin. We were talking about the desegregation of the public courts, tennis courts, here in the city of St. Louis. And we did touch a bit on how Richard Hudlin coached Arthur Ashe. But there was another tennis trailblazer he coached, that was Althea Gibson, and she was the first Black woman to win a Wimbledon singles championship and a Grand Slam tournament. And these two players, you know, neither Althea Gibson nor Arthur Ashe were natives of St. Louis. Gibson was from South Carolina. Ashe moved to St. Louis from Virginia. What do we know about how Richard Hudlin came to coach each of them, Cicely?
So some of the records that I saw recorded that he knew Arthur Ashe's coach in Virginia. And then I think like there was conversations that were occurring because there was this desire to play year round. And I think there was also an issue. It was also an issue because Arthur Ashe could not play at different courts and he wasn't allowed access to the things that we had going on here in St. Louis. And so I think at one point it became a conversation with Arthur Ashe. He didn't necessarily want to leave his family and his friends, but I think he saw St. Louis as a way to get more skills and to be able to compete at a higher level with, you know, Richard Hudlin as his instructor and support system. And so I did see some sources that talk about Richard Hudlin taking in Arthur Ashe as if he was his own son and coaching him very strategically around the sport. And so Richard Hudlin does say, like, St. Louis was foundational to the person that we know, Arthur Ashe, who he becomes, and then even goes to UCLA to compete at a high level and then continues to just show himself to be an incredible athlete. Mm-hmm. And so I there's some really profound things that transpire here in St. Louis. And Richard Hudlin was at the foundation of enabling someone like an Arthur Ashe to come here when he wasn't allowed the opportunity because of his race elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And Amanda, you're mentioning something about Sumner High School and its being a center of Black educational excellence, right?
Yeah, we have so many stories like Arthur Ashe, right? We have Grace Bunbury, we have Tina Turner, even though, you know, that gets into some layers. But we have these people, you know, folks that came to St. Louis, went to Sumner High School, and then it wasn't just that, you know, they were great themselves, but it's the teachers, it's the educators, it's the people that lifted them up. And because of, you know, the realities of segregation at that time, for a lot of Black men and women, teaching was a career path, and you had very well-educated folks teaching at Sumner that the other schools actually, like the, you know, the white schools didn't have that level of education, didn't have access to that level of education in the public schools. Mm-hmm. So there's an interesting several things can be true at once type of situation when it comes to the level of excellence at mm-hmm. Sumner.
And there were even doctorate, you know, folks who came out of having doctorates, right, and, you know, just being these incredible folks within their own fields who are coming in because of the fact that segregation does exist roughly around that time. They're coming back to Sumner and they're teaching from this collegiate, you know, this right. this place of excellence.
And we usually talk about musicians or athletes, yeah, but there's community leaders, there are scientists, there's medical professionals, right, that are coming out of that environment.
Mm-hmm. And just to give respect where it's due, that the game of tennis and other sports as well, in order to be excellent, you must have a great brain. Like, that is an exceptional muscle to achieve. I actually did not know that there was an Arthur Ashe connection here in St. Louis. Until I moved here, I lived in Los Angeles for a long time. So I saw Arthur Ashe's name, you know, at UCLA. So it was just very cool to see that. And then, you know, for me personally, to learn about Richard Hudlin through the exhibit at the Missouri History Museum was a great little connection there. Now, the exhibit that is now at Missouri History Museum, we did touch on this a little bit, Amanda, earlier. Why was it so important to highlight Hudlin in this exhibit about Forest Park and, you know, this really important milestone? And what could be looked at just as a small part of its history?
Yeah, it was important to use, it's a great story and a chance to tell that great story. You didn't want to pass that up. Also, he's a great example of other stories, right? He's not the only person that worked for this integration in different settings, and so he's a good example. I think it is interesting that there are Hudlin tennis courts in Forest Park named after him. A lot of people don't know about those courts, so it was also a way to bring awareness to those courts, because the other courts are named after Dwight Davis, who was a parks commissioner for just a couple of years. Very different legacy than Richard Hudlin.
Mm-hmm. We have Michael, who is calling from Richardman Heights. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to point out there's a historical marker for Arthur Ashe at the corner of Bennett Avenue and Laclede Station Road in Richmond Heights. And I think it's the spot where he practiced. There was a court there and outside someone's home. I think he lived there for a while. And so the city of Richmond Heights put up this great information at that intersection.
Mm-hmm. What was it about that caught your attention? Are you a tennis player, Michael?
Well, I used to cut through there to drop my kid off to school. We got out one day and we looked and read the historical marker.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just think it's Arthur Ashe is just he's not celebrated enough. And then today I'm learning more about Richard Hudlin, and he was actually born the same year my grandfather was born, so it makes me think about things like that. And I don't know, a trailblazer, really, to try to desegregate the tennis courts in Forest Park, you know, the pressure he was probably under to have to deal with the... It's one thing to file a lawsuit, but you walk into a coffee shop and people probably question you about it in, you know, different places around the community if that was the... you know, putting his reputation on the line.
Right.
So,
Michael, thank you so much.
It's remarkable.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for calling. And I think this very well illustrates why we need to be talking about Richard Hudlin. Cicely, you are nodding as you heard Michael speak.
Yes. So I think he's absolutely correct. In research, I also found the marker too. I haven't visited. So now, like, I have this, Michael, thank you so much, because I did the research. But of course, you know, it's one thing to see it and be in that space. But at 12, I think it was 1221 Laclede Station Road, I believe, is the roughly around the location that Richard Hudlin lived, and that's where Arthur Ashe lived as well during the time of being here. And so I think it's a marker dedicated to the history and the legacy of both individuals. So yeah, he's spot on, and I love it.
Yeah. And as we close, Amanda, why does Hudlin's legacy and impact in the tennis world have importance beyond, you know, the sport? I mean, what is it that you hope people take away from looking at that part of the exhibit?
Yeah, I hope that people take away the reason, you know, another reason for using his story is an example of that we think things have been the way they have been for a long time, and there's always people pushing back. And yes, Arthur Ashe came of that, but the bigger story is all of the other players that got to play, all the other Black players that had access to better courts and just enjoyed the sport.
Right. Amanda Clark is a Missouri Historical Society public historian and its CSTL Tours manager. And Cicely Hunter is also with the Missouri Historical Society as a public historian and with the African American History Initiative. Thank you both for joining us today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
This episode was produced by Maya Norfleet.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Doerr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.